Going to take Peter out to dinner, but a rather more collective meal than he's used to. I wonder if it'll be to his taste. But first, Dr. Joe Williams again, on who is going it alone.
The work that was done by ourselves and also other research has identified these two groups. You've got the happy independents, who are people that are always going to want to live alone and enjoy living alone very much. But we also have the regretful loners. There is quite a large percentage of one-person households perhaps could be attracted to living in different forms of housing. And really, I suppose it's a question of providing them with the opportunity to do that.
You're listening to Costing the Earth on BBC Radio 4, where today we're putting solo livers in the dock for crimes against the environment. And right now, I've got one such villain, Peter Guigan, beside me in the car. We're on our way to a new co-housing development in Stroud, where the residents have their own home, but also share gardens, laundry and a dining room. It'll be interesting to see if it seems like a hopeless hippie legacy or a real goer for the 21st century. And we're going to meet the man behind the idea, David Michael. I'm sure he's going to be passionate about it.
Okay, this is the main entrance to Spring Hill Co-Housing. Can you hear that bell? That's the bell for dinner.
That's already got me worried. It feels like I'm obliged
to be there. Yes. We often joke when we hear the bell that we're sort of all going to be dressed in orange and then be mesmerised zombies and we'll walk to the dining room.
So we walk round, and what are we coming into now?
This is the common house. Unfortunately, we have to queue up, like canteen fashion, with our plate.
Fine, so, no, that's not a problem. Yeah.
The heating may even be on.
Lead on?
Yes.
So is this a fairly typical turnout for a communal...
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people are eating today. I think it's about 40. It varies between 30 and 60. That's the cooking rota you can see when you're on. These are the menus. So today is tofu salad, rice salad, green salad and roasted parsnips.
So down to dinner in the communal dining room for our brown rice and tofu and salad. Grated carrot, very nice. With Karen and John, is that right?
Yep.
How long have you two lived in this development? Is it since when it was built?
I've been here 3.5 years, so we're actually the first people who moved on to the site.
And John?
And I've been here 2 years, almost exactly.
And Karen, I gather you're here with a family, is that correct?
That's right, yeah, I live here with my son and my husband.
What attracted you to living in a place like this?
Well, we'd lived previously in another community. We lived in a houseboat. We wanted to move out of London. I really didn't want to move to some town where I didn't know anybody and have to completely start again. And so actually the attraction for me was that I could move here to a ready-made community as such.
What about you, John?
I think it was the degree of community involvement, community living that I liked. I'm not a commune, not the intensity of living in a commune and sharing socks and all that sort of stuff.
One of the things that we've heard, indeed this programme is based upon, that the actual feature of more and more people living on their own is one of the things that's driving a lot of the, want for another phrase, environmental evils. Do you feel you're avoiding some of those pitfalls by living in a more communal way?
Definitely. I mean, I think some of the things are quite small and quite subtle, but they're really nice things. So if you're going up to do your cardboard recycling, you'd never just go and take yours. You'd always knock on 4 or 5 doors and say, has anybody got any cardboard? I'm going to the recycling. So in those small ways, we're starting to...
So it'll be one car journey.
One car journey instead of five, exactly that. But we're also starting to look at car shares. I think one of the other things you mentioned that was quite interesting is about the footprint for each of the houses, because one of the features of co-housing is that, well, certainly here, is we have very small gardens. Nobody has very much private space, and that was something that worried me a little bit, but we've got so much shared space that we'll often gather around what we call the green. And I think had we had our own really big gardens, we wouldn't spend so much time out in the communal bit of the land. So I think that's actually been really, for me, beneficial.
Doesn't it ever get on your wick sometimes? The whole communal living.
Yeah, it does. Think, oh. It does, yeah. I mean, I don't like the fact that I have to ask permission if I want to get a dog, if I want to get a cat. You know, there are certain things that really are quite irritating. And there are some times when my door has been knocked on so many times that I just think, go away! But it's not very often. I think you have to take the rough with the smooth. So you get the good stuff and you take some of the stuff that's irritating. And I think, you know, there's enough good stuff to keep us here.
and it's now attracting more people. Just across the road, David Michael is behind the development of these co-flats. They're nearing completion.
We're going to have to move this light around.
Inspection light here.
Can you see your way up?
The shared facilities are the laundry area where there are two washing machines, and that comes directly off the kitchen and the dining rooms above it. We can go on to there.
We also expect the corridor to not just be a corridor, but to be a very social area, because that's where people will meet. And that's one of the benefits of co-housing, is that common space is not just space to be avoided, it's space to use.
So is it a bit more like a version of the student halls I used to live in, where we had our own dwelling place, but we also sort of owned the public space as well?
I think that's very similar.
We're now on a ladder into where the kitchen and laundry, did you say?
Yes. I guess this is where a lot of the energy in a normal home would be consumed, in the kitchen and the laundry. So how important was it to the design to have this as a kind of appealing place that people would want to come and share?
Well, I think this is the hub of the community, and the idea that it would be cosy, very attractive. Like, laundry used to be very sociable, but now everybody has their own private machines. Then the shared meals, we expect there to be at least three shared evening meals a week, but it will be very much the hub of the community.
But on the other hand, they've got the best of both worlds. I mean, they've got a kitchen in their own place and a kitchen here. There's double the inbuilt energy in building those resources for a start. I mean, is it really as green as you're painting it?
The fact that people will be buying food together, that's a very efficient way of doing it. There's a huge amount of food wastage when people buy food for themselves. So buying communally and eating communally, and also eating privately, but buying communally. So you get both of those aspects. And the double kitchen, it's not sort of double kitchen, it's 14 flats plus an extra kitchen. So it's only an extra 14th. And as a result, some of the private kitchens can be smaller. And people can live in smaller flats.
Peter Guigan's been around having a look with you, David. Peter, what do you make of it?
If I was to live in this kind of environment, I'm sure there would be times where I would be thinking, I just couldn't face the prospect of a birthday party or a Kayleigh tonight. So how do you factor those sorts of things into the big old plan?
Well, I can speak for myself personally, because I'm a resident there and I'm very private.
Right.
You know, I hate having to do things communally. But balanced against that, I like being communal and I like hanging out with people and having fun. So you just don't turn up to a birthday party. I mean, you can just stay at home or go somewhere else. There's no enforced communality.
So, Peter, you've had a look round, you've heard it, you've seen it. If someone were to open a place like this near you in Solihull, would you put your name on the list and why?
Absolutely, yes, I would. I mean, I think that the social community they've got going here just looks amazing. I'm not so sure about the eco side of it, though. I mean, I'm not sure that, say, carbon footprint per person would necessarily be lower here than it would be in a sort of more traditional type of housing setting, but this is a fantastic social space they've got here. Wonderful.
So you think this is a model that could be attractive to young professionals today?
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, there's a surprise. I expected the social side to be the problem, not the attraction. I suppose it shows that while communal living has an image problem, the reality is more enticing. Maybe the cast of Friends should be the poster boys and girls for the idea. Their setup attracted viewers by the billion. But co-housing remains unusual and problematic in Britain, with just 10 developments on the cards. Alan Heeks from the Co-Housing Network says the idea deserves a leg up from the planners.
I find the potential for co-housing hugely exciting. I mean, in Denmark, 5% of all households live in co-housing communities. I think the potential could be that big here. So essentially what we need is planning policies that enable co-housing and similar projects, because of their sustainability and their affordability and their social benefits, that enables them to actually get planning permission quicker. And the other key point there is that it's very difficult for a co-housing project to compete on land prices with a conventional developer, because typically it will have environmental features and affordable housing provision and other things that mean that there isn't as much money to pay the maximum price for the land. So the planning policies are also needed to enable us to be treated as, if you like, an exception to conventional policies because of the benefits that it brings.
But rather than grappling for a new age solution, isn't there an age-old system for living together known as the family? Here in the Victoria and Albert Museum Architecture Gallery, they've got a family home in a glass case,
And Professor Tim Jackson is here with me. Tim, do you think the family and their home will soon languish as a museum piece?
It talks about the nuclear family, the warmth of the hearth, this kind of extended family that joins it at Christmas. It's like a kind of model of a world that's...